Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And you are currently listening to a mini episode.
Congratulations!
I was going to say congratulations, but it's okay. It's your turn to talk. We're going to, as always, we try to promise you that we are going to get this shit done.
I feel like we should stop saying that.
No.
I feel like people don't believe us now.
No, they don't.
We've said it too many times.
Let's try to prove it. So let's just get right into it, shall we?
All right, yes. Let's jump right in.
All right. So I was reading about the Netroots Convention. And I read two very conflicting articles, which was very interesting to me. So for those of you who don't know, the Netroots Convention is an early showcase for Democrats considering a run for president in 2020. And then I think it's also a lot of other, like, Democratic politicians and things like that, where they talk about their shit. And in this article on BuzzFeed, I read about that talk there revolved around intersectionality, socialism, and a blending of anti-establishment and anti-Wall Street sentiment with calls for racial and economic justice. The discussions at Netroots showed how far we've come with their progressive views since the Democratic primary between Hillary and Bernie. Someone said, and I don't remember who, Republicans are going to call us socialists no matter what we do, so we might as well give them the real thing. And so I read this and it's like, oh my gosh, like we're becoming so progressive and like socialist and they're not going to be afraid of those labels. And then I saw on HuffPost.
Well, here's the thing. Like,
yeah,
Republicans are going to call Democrats socialists no matter what they do. But I also feel like they've been playing into the hands of that, like trying so hard not to be called socialists. That's actually been like counterintuitive for them, because
but, yeah, they're saying now they're gonna like steer into the skid.
I mean, I hope so, because what we've seen thus far and why I think a lot of young people don't feel confident in, you know, the Democratic Party in general is that on the right they are very, very, very far right.
Yeah.
On the quote unquote left, if we're talking Republican versus Democrat
yeah.
they're far more moderate. And they will always lean into more moderate candidates when they have a choice or they have in the past.
Like, I feel like it's a more tentative left. You know what I mean? It's not so much of like a radical left is not going to be chosen as the prime candidate.
I mean, I hope that they change their tune.
Yeah,
the
it
way
would
that
be great.
They treated Bernie in the primaries, it was like
bullshit.
It was total bullshit, and it was like when you have the option between like fresh blood, new candidate who is pretty far left, and an old school politician.
Yeah, an already known.
Yeah, lots of money, lots of backing. That's who you're going to go with.
Was still so much more of a risk because she wasn't as likable.
But they obviously didn't feel that way.
Yeah,
because
but it's interesting.
They backed her so hard.
They did very hard, but it's just, you know, seeing it from my perspective, like at the time, I just remember thinking that was more of a risk because I saw Donald Trump being more afraid of Bernie Sanders. But anyways, moving forward on that, I saw this other article on HuffPost where there was this Black Lives Matter group called, they were calling themselves the Black Ass Caucus, which I love, and they were disappointed in how Netroots Nation treated Black conference goers and panelists. They walked onto stage to detail their grievances. Over about 15 minutes, the Black activists faulted the conference for scheduling panel discussions on Black activism in the same time slots, called out interpersonal slights from white conference goers, and lamented conference attendees' lack of diversity and inadequate representation of New Orleans attendees. So this was held in New Orleans. And they were mostly upset by the lack of official recognition and scheduled time for Black caucus to meet during the weekend.
And you see, to me then, it starts to feel like lip service from the Democratic Party.
That's what I'm saying. Is that they're saying this thing, but it's like we have to look at who's saying these things. And I also found it interesting because it goes to show you where you get your news sources and how you go about finding the things that you're reading. Because there was no mention of negativity whatsoever in the BuzzFeed article that I read. And then as I'm putting in Netroots into Google, just to see whatever what other news stuff is about it to get a more clear picture of what was happening, I'm starting to see all this Black Lives Matter stuff is, like, the first thing that's showing
right.
up. So I'm like, why wasn't that discussed?
Because of who wrote the article.
Totally. And that's what I'm saying. It's proof that we do need to do, you know, a lot of research to be able to see the full picture. And it was definitely a wake-up call for me on that, because sometimes I'm like, oh, I read this thing, and that's it. The end.
Right. Well, I mean, and it's all a matter of perspective, right? Yeah. The person who wrote that article, the BuzzFeed article, truly, I'm sure, believed that it was super diverse.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was malicious. No, I'm just saying,
But that...
Or purposeful.
It's not malicious or purposeful, but it is insidious in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because what it is it's your privilege of being able to be like, but they said diversity, so it's all good.
So it's good,
without
yeah.
looking at it even an inch under the surface further than that, you know?
Yeah. Well, going forward, there was a man, Ashton P. Woods, who is quoted as saying, I am not a number. We are not a number. And he goes on to say, he talked about white attendees who had interrupted conversations, ignored the Black conference goers, and asked rude questions about what the Black participants are, quote unquote, doing there. Woods said the conference organizers boast that 67% of the panelists of color amounted to, quote unquote, tokenization. And I guess they did have a large amount of panelists of color, from what I understood from this article, but I think that wasn't the point that he was trying to make. It's like they did invite more people of color, it sounds like, but he was upset by the way that those people of color were being treated.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they double booked a lot of events so that
it didn't give them the opportunity.
Yeah, so that not all people of color could attend all events by speakers of color.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they didn't give them what they felt the adequate platform to be able to speak about their needs and their wants. So when the Black Ass Caucus asked the audience to threaten not to go to next year's convention unless it was more attuned to the needs of Black Americans and local residents, the attendees shouted, yes! So about the local attendees, Tabitha Mustafa is quoted of saying, the only folks from New Orleans who were here were working the door.
Oh.
Yeah, so that to me is like a big, like, there really were not many people that were, like, from New Orleans that were working
this. Then why even have it there? It's so strange.
Yeah, it is weird. And I guess it's going to be in Philadelphia next year, and they were just saying, like, unless there's more inclusivity, like, who here is not going to come?
And it does feel tokenizing to have these...
Look at all of these people of color here.
Right,
we're not going to let you listen to them, but look at them.
Well, I mean, and to have them in predominantly Black communities or mm-hmm. cities. Like, both Philadelphia and New Orleans are very Black cities. Mm-hmm. And so it feels tokenizing to be like, we're going to do it in an urban, progressive, Black area.
Yeah, which does seem very, like, purposeful.
It does, yeah. Yeah, it feels
calculated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it might not, you know, it's white people-ing the best they can, right? Like,
right.
They're just like, we're trying.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do this, so let's just have it in a Black place. That's good, right?
No, and that's just the thing, and I think that is another root of the problem, is that it's not just about white people-ing the best they can to be inclusive. You actually have to have people of color helping you organize these things.
Right, they need to be in the conversation, yeah.
Right, it's not just enough to invite the people there. There needs to be more people of color that are a part of the whole planning process,
mm-hmm.
because, and I don't know if there was or was not, you know, I don't know the details of that, but I feel like if there was somebody who was there to be more vocal about how they felt that the conference should be run, as far as if you are going to make this a progressive thing, how to really make it inclusive for everybody,
yeah,
that maybe it would have been a little bit different. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have been. Maybe they wouldn't have even listened to that person. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I found that interesting, especially the reason that I wanted to specifically share that too is because of the two very different articles that I read.
For sure. Yeah.
So,
that's interesting. And it's also a reminder, again, I know we talked about this in the swearing episode that just came out, but it is also, again, a reminder to check your sources, you know, check who's writing what.
Read the whole article.
Read several articles so you can get several different perspectives on it, because probably your truth might be somewhere in the middle mm-hmm. of between all of that, you know.
And I think it's going to make us less divided if we are willing to read from many different perspectives.
Right.
And many different
with
sides.
With an openness, yeah.
Right. Even if it's still, you know, these are both on the left that we're reading.
Right.
But it's two very different sides of the left.
Well, it's the difference between Democrats and socialists, you know
exactly.
what I mean? You're both on the left, but they're very different ideologies.
They're very different.
When you come down to it.
Yeah, even if you're not, you know, necessarily reading far right and far left, at least make sure that you have some diversity, no pun intended, in the articles that you're reading.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Johnny Depp. Oh, God.
Wait, why are you saying poor Johnny Depp?
No, not poor Johnny Depp, but, like, this situation, it's really more poor me. Because I...
Because you like Johnny Depp a lot.
I used to. Yeah, I same. Loved him so
well,
much, like...
I wasn't, like, this fangirl over him like some of my friends were, but I did
was,
really like him.
For sure. Like, I wasn't
I
a
totally
fangirl over necessarily, like, him, but, it was the idea of Johnny Depp was like, appealing to
Johnny
me.
Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder, for me, was, like,
yeah, they were, like, 90s super couple.
I love Winona Ryder so much. So, for me, I was like, ah, so pretty.
Yeah, and he was just beautiful.
Yeah,
and
oh, God, he was a really hot
such
young
a
man.
Handsome man. And so, I am mourning the loss of Johnny Depp because he is a dumpster fire. truly,
no,
he's
for real.
A dumpster fire of a
worst.
Human being.
Yeah.
So, a couple of months ago, Rolling Stone wrote that article about him. Basically, like, detailing his life. Well, not detailing his life, but they sent a reporter, kind of, like, almost famous style, to go live with Johnny Depp in his house for, like, a couple of days.
I'm surprised that he was cool with that.
Well, I don't think... I think he's very out of touch with reality.
Right.
So this guy went there and was just, like, wrote this article, and it made Johnny Depp look horrible.
Tell me about it, because I know that he was doing some movie, and it's been, like... indefinitely paused.
Yes, that's what we're going to talk about. But it's partially because of this article.
Right, tell
me
about
it. This guy went and stayed there, and he was like, it was the weirdest experience. Like, he's so out of touch with reality. He just talks about himself constantly. Mm. He drinks all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just like drinking and drugs. And it got to the point where, like, he was supposed to stay with Johnny Depp for as long as Johnny Depp was awake, sleep when Johnny's asleep, so that you can really, like... see what his lifestyle
oh
is like.
God.
And it got to the point where Johnny Depp was not sleeping. He was, like, staying up at all hours, to where this writer was like, I have to go to bed.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it got. It was like he was living this vampiric kind of existence.
Yeah.
And there are lots of weird, bizarre quotes and things that happened in that article.
Well, yeah, if he's not sleeping and drinking and doing drugs.
Right. I mean, and at
like,
one
he's
point...
he's probably on, like, speed or cocaine, and the writer is not. And he's like, I need to sleep. And Johnny's like, I'm good.
At one point, the reporter was like, so there are these rumors that you spend, like, $100,000 a month on wine. Like, do you want to comment on that? And he's like, I spend way more than that on wine. And you're like, what the fuck?
That's such a Johnny Depp response, though. Like, he's so, like, aloof about stuff, I feel like.
And he wants to, like, build a tunnel between all of his houses. He's got, like, 12 houses, like, some overseas, some in the United States.
What the fuck?
And he wants to build tunnels, like, underground tunnels that connect them all. It's just bizarre. And, like, the reporter at the end was like...
He sounds psychotic. Like, he's in some sort of, like, alternate reality.
I think addiction, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the reporter at one point said at the end of the article, he was like, I looked around the room and I realized everyone in that room was getting paid by Johnny Depp. Like, I don't think he has friends. It's all just like he surrounds himself with
again,
yes men.
It's the idea of Johnny Depp. It's not Johnny Depp. And, you know, for me, he was canceled as soon as I found out. It was Amber Heard was her name, right?
Like, correct,
he
yeah.
Mm-hmm. was abusing...
Well,
wife.
I think that was the beginning of the end for Johnny Depp, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's done stuff before then, but we were in a different
world, I don't know.
And I feel like, because I feel like I've heard stuff about him where I was just like, I don't know.
I hadn't, and his ex-wives and girlfriends, including Winona Ryder, this is why people didn't believe Amber Heard. I have to chastise Winona Ryder
a little bit on that. Winona Ryder has been problematic. I'm not going to ignore that.
Yeah, because she and his ex-wife and his ex-wife, Vanessa Paradis, they came forward and were like, he was never violent with us. He never had an issue with us. So I really do think that maybe after his marriage to Vanessa Paradis fell apart, his addiction went out of control. Because after that is when he started developing violent tendencies.
Right. He could have had some sort of, like, emotional or, you know, some sort of weird... There's a reason they're exes. You know, there might be some things
Yeah,
that,
but
like,
they were
wrong.
Together for, like, 12 years. And I don't necessarily attribute that to any kind of abuse. I think that's true. Sometimes people just grow apart, and that's fine. But, and to my knowledge, I don't know that he had any major, not on set was it reported, and not in these relationships did they report that he was ever violent. So that's why I really believe that his addiction has spiraled out of control.
Yeah.
Because he has now been violent on two movie sets, and I do believe Amber Heard when she says that he was violent towards her.
I 100% believe her as well.
So... Johnny Depp's movie about the murder of notorious B.I.G., City of Lies, has been pulled a month before its scheduled release, Variety reports. The film was supposed to open September 7th, but is now undated, according to a spokesperson for the distribution company.
Who was he playing in this movie?
I think he was playing, like, a detective.
Oh.
Who was, like, trying to solve Biggie's murder.
I'm honestly so bored with his acting, because...
I am, too. It's the same.
The same. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the worst part of Into the Woods. I was so excited about Into the Woods, and I love that play, and I saw it, and I was like, Johnny Depp.
He just plays varying degrees of weird in every...
of himself, basically. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, there's nothing great about it.
Yeah. City of Lies is based on Randall Sullivan's book, Labyrinth, the detective investigates the murder of Tupac Shakur and Notorious B.I.G., blah, 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 blah. That's a long title. That is a long title. Labyrinth, a detective investigates the murders of Tupac Shakur and Notorious B.I.G., the implication of Death Row Records, Suge Knight, and the origins of the Los Angeles police scandal. That's a title of a book. That is way too long.
Oh my God, did you read this book, The Detective of the Notorious B.I.G.?
And you're like, no. I would never read that book. If your book is longer than like four or five words.
You mean the title, not the book?
You're the title. The whole book.
Speaking of book reading, we've been talking about how we've been wanting to read books more. I'm like halfway through a book that I started the other day. When I had my like full day off yesterday, I like got through this book.
What is it?
It's called Hysteria. It's this easy true crime whatever book. It's nothing like super dense or anything.
It sounds familiar.
But I'm glad that I'm actually like reading a book. So I just wanna, like, chime in really quick. Continue.
So the decision to yank City of Lies comes 1 month after former location manager Greg Rocky Brooks sued Depp for alleged assault. According to Brooks, Depp punched him twice in the ribs and verbally assaulted him on set. The crew member also claimed that he was fired from City of Lies after refusing to sign a non-disclosure agreement that would have prevented him from suing Depp. Brooks is seeking unspecified damages. So he essentially, like, punched this guy in the ribs, and from what I understand, it was something like he was getting to film this scene. Johnny Depp was getting to film a scene in this movie, or direct a scene in this movie. And they were like, okay, we need to get off of this location. We need to close this set. And this guy was a location manager. And he's like, we need to move on. And they were like, well, you can't tell Johnny Depp that you need to move on.
Oh, God.
Because they were like, he's going to, like, lose his shit on you. So Greg Brooks went to cops or security that was there. And he was like, hey, I don't want to deal with Johnny Depp, like, but we need to, like, close this set down. Can you go tell him that? And Johnny Depp overheard him and lost his shit and basically started this, like, big man fight and, like, punched him in the ribs and fucking, like, kicked him or something.
Fuck you,
asshole. And then was, like, basically, like, hit me back, do it, like, hit me back. And, like, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Of course. So he didn't. But all of that sounds like such toxic, shitty behavior.
Yeah, it's very childish.
So in addition to the City of Lies suit, Depp is reportedly facing a lawsuit from two former bodyguards who claim the actor didn't pay them properly and put them in toxic situations.
Yeah.
In July, Depp settled a multi-million dollar lawsuit with his former business managers, whom he accused of gross misconduct.
This shit needs to come out, though. Honestly, like, there are so many people that I know personally and stories that I've heard where they are working for celebrities in a personal manner, like a bodyguard or a nanny or an assistant, and they are being treated horribly.
Like, absolute garbage.
But with, like, non-disclosure agreements, or with just, like, being basically manipulated into feeling like you can't share those things.
Yeah.
And then finally coming forward and having, like, this ball drop on you because you share, because you're tainting the name of this person or things like
that. Yeah, that person tainted their own fucking name, and we need to be holding celebrities and athletes and all these people in the spotlight
accountable.
Yeah.
Because they've been living in this world where they can get away with things for far too long.
So, of course, they are. Like, yeah.
They are, because that's how society has set it up.
Yeah.
I mean, think of all the people with money and celebrities. I mean, Lindsay Lohan going through the court system.
Yeah.
Like, she slipped through the cracks of all of that so many times.
Or even if you talk about, even if they're not celebrities, but let's talk about the middle of the country football players, high school football players. Look at how much shit they get away with.
Yeah.
Anytime you're given this kind of like, yeah, this pass because you have this quote unquote talent or whatever. Chris Brown, look at all this shit that these people get away with. It's insane.
It's slowly becoming not as like
accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But slowly.
Depp's next film, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, is scheduled to open November 16th. However, fans of the Harry Potter spinoff series have criticized the decision to cast Depp in the film after his ex-wife, Amber Heard, accused him of physical and verbal abuse.
And I can't believe
J.K. Rowling basically defended the decision.
Has defended him. Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, what is happening?
I have long since determined that J.K. Rowling is problematic. She should be an episode of Your Fave is Problematic,
it
honestly.
It sucks because, like, God, Harry Potter.
And she's amazing in a lot of ways. Like, she's very, you know, philanthropic, and, like, she does a lot of really cool stuff. But at the same time, she also does a lot of really shady, questionable shit, too, where it's like, and that was one of them. I'm bummed out because I fucking love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I adore Harry Potter.
I still haven't seen the first Fantastic Beasts.
I did, and I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
Johnny Depp is one of those that I just can't.
Well, I didn't even know he was in it, because he doesn't make an appearance until the last scene of the movie. You don't see him.
He's in the trailer, because I've seen the trailer at a few movies that I've gone
to. I didn't see the trailer for the first Fantastic Beasts. No, it was a surprise. I don't think most anyone...
No, in the new one.
Oh, in the new one, yes. Because he's revealed at the end of the first Fantastic Beasts.
Oh.
Like, you don't know it's him, and then it's, like, the last scene you, like, realize that that's Johnny Depp. And then he's in the... Because he's Grindelwald, so he's in the whole next movie.
No, I like Grindelwald a lot.
You like Grindelwald?
Well, like, the story.
Oh, okay. I was like, Grindelwald.
Yeah, Grindelwald is the one that Dumbledore was in love with, right?
Yes, but he's evil.
No, he's fucking evil, but I like that whole story. That's what I mean.
I also think J.K. Rowling is leaving out the romance in the movie, too. So it's like, that also sucks.
Then don't write it in the fucking book.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. Take it up with J.K.
Yo, J.K., what we doing? Okay, let's talk about other things.
All right, so the last thing that I want to kind of touch on is...
Are we doing good?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So we're recording on a Tuesday. Yesterday was the season finale of The Bachelorette. I know. Sure. I know. I wouldn't be bringing this up.
I know. I know. But we still love it. I don't watch any of it, but I like reading the articles about it.
I don't even love it. Like, that's the thing. I watched my very first Bachelor season when it was Rachel Berry. That doesn't seem right.
It's Glee.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was like, that's not her name. I can't remember her last name. But when it was Rachel, the first black Bachelorette.
I don't know.
So I was
like,
I remember
her face, but I don't remember. I mean, I never watched it, so I don't know.
The girls at work were like, let's all watch this together.
Oh, yeah. Because you wore the costume with the name.
Yeah, and they were like, it's the first black Bachelorette. Like, let's watch it together.
Yeah, celebrate.
So I did, and it was like mildly entertaining. The episodes are altogether way too long. Each episode's like fucking 2 hours, with this season finale being 3 hours.
Ugh!
Which is insane.
What is the time?
I don't know. At this point, when I watch on Hulu...
I want some of that time.
When I watch on Hulu at this point, I skip forward. That's what I did.
Yeah.
All through this season, because I'm just like, I fucking couldn't handle it.
Then why did you watch it at all?
Because, again, it's like a bonding thing at work. We watch it, we talk about it, or whatever. So we watched the last season of The Bachelor. It was incredibly boring and terrible, but he...
Broke this girl's heart.
Yeah, he picks a girl at the end... And she thinks everything's great, and they're, like, engaged or whatever. And then he's like, JK, I actually made the wrong decision, and I want to marry the other girl.
It's so shitty.
So he leaves her.
I saw one of, like, the first episodes where, like, she takes this guy of The Bachelorette. Where she takes this guy on a date, and the date is basically, like,
breaking
warehouse
shit?
Where they're breaking shit. Yeah, and it's, well, was it turned down for what? Being played or whatever?
That, yeah, because
I'm like,
Lil Jon's there.
That would suck to be that guy. I'd be like, I don't want to do this. Like,
well, he must have been into it because he was one of the two in the finale.
Really?
Yes, Blake.
Oh my gosh.
So.
I liked, what was the guy, one of her first, I literally watched this because I was in the nail salon and that was the only thing on the TV.
Uh-huh.
But there was someone, like, who was really, really, like, sweet and kind and genuine. I don't remember his name, but she kissed him.
She kisses all of them, so
I know.
Who fucking
knows? There was the I've heard about the model, because he was a piece of shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he was a piece of shit, but he was also entertaining in a way that I need in my TV shows. Mm. I need in my drama shows. This is why I'm watching this shit. If it's too boring, then I'm not into it. But anyway, so...
It's too real.
So, things came out pretty early on that the person she gave the first impression rose to... It came out that he had liked a bunch of shit on Instagram, right? That was, like, basically from, like, far-right Instagram accounts.
Oh.
Like, he had liked a thing saying that David Hogue from Parkland was a crisis actor. He liked a picture of, like, a border agent throwing a Mexican baby over the wall. He liked things that were talking about, like, feminazis, like, all kinds of... really fucked up shit, transphobic stuff.
He sounds great.
And
let's give him a call. Let's be his bestie.
Well, so that went down, right? And I kind of got, I was like, oh no. I was getting weird vibes because it was like second week of Bachelorette when all that shit came out. And they asked her about it. And of course, she can't give anything away. But
yeah.
Her answers were very like, worrisome, where she was just like, just watch it and kind of like find out, determine for yourself, people change, etc., etc. This motherfucker won the season. She ended up with him at the end.
No.
And
is he the one too that was like, some people give me butterflies, you give me eagles?
Oh my God. That's the other thing about this guy. He is.
And she's like, he's such a poet. I just read this stuff. Like, I don't know anything.
He is so stupid.
His name is Garrett, right?
Garrett.
Yeah.
So dumb, too. Like, look, he can be, like, a sweet, dumb guy. Like, that's fine. But he's not.
Mm-hmm.
He's a racist.
Racist, dumb guy.
And...
we don't like racist, dumb people.
Well, I mean, and maybe he's just really dumb, and so he just doesn't think for himself at all, and, like, that's what he's surrounded by. But his apology, quote-unquote, was so fucking weak, because it's like, these... likes are not representative of who I am as
yes,
a person.
They are,
and I'm
because
like,
you liked them.
And to me, that's almost more representative of who you are than posting something shitty.
Yeah.
Because if you just like something shitty or 6, 7, 8 shitty things on Instagram that are all like alt-right fucking horrible things.
Yeah.
That's more indicative of your character than posting things, in my opinion, because you thought that you weren't gonna find like
yeah, you didn't think that people were going to know.
We're going to find out. Like,
yeah.
And you did it kind of, like, absentmindedly because you thought this shit was
then,
funny.
Well, and you know that it's going to be, like, less easy
to track.
Figure out.
Yeah.
And that you're getting away with it and that, it, yeah.
But, so, last
I'm
night...
I'm just repeating it was just, what you said.
It was just shitty because it was, like, not that I'm a huge Bachelor fan or...
It's just hard to watch somebody choose someone that you know is, like, a piece of shit.
And she is... like, not that way at all. Like, on her social... well, you would think she's not that way at all. Because on her social media, it's like she campaigned for Hillary. She's out there in her, like, pussy hat at, you know, women's marches and shit. So you would think
in
she would care.
In real life, that guy, too, would want nothing to do with her. But because it's The Bachelorette and because they're getting all this publicity... look, we don't know what they're like behind closed doors. We don't know if she's really that progressive or whatever. We
but
don't
I'm
know.
Also like, look, ma'am, if you...
but if he's really so anti-feminazi, like, in real life, if you were to meet this girl, he'd be like, bye.
Yeah.
I get that you have a lot of glittery dresses, but bye.
But maybe he can deal with that aspect of her because she is, like, white and, like, straight-laced in every other way that's acceptable to him. She's not, like, a Latina. It's not like he ended up on Rachel's season with the first Black Bachelorette, you know
yeah.
what I mean? It's like, you know, it's...
right.
It's one of those
he
things...
he can still appear to be a certain way for both teams, kind of.
Well, and her, I'm just like, she almost made him out to be a victim, being like, and he has had such horrible things said to him throughout this process, and he's just learning and growing and changing, and I believe that people can change, and I'm just like...
okay, I believe that people can change, too.
But Parkland happened earlier this year. People can't change
that
fast,
that
dude.
That's not that long ago. And a lot of that, it takes a lot of work to undo.
And a lot of that stuff to me is it's not like it's unforgivable, but it's so repulsive to me that anything short of saying I denounce his beliefs.
Yeah.
And I need him to acknowledge that and give a real apology because he never did.
It's not right.
Is not enough. So yeah, I'm done with you, Becca. I didn't really like you anyway. You were kind of boring this season, but anyway.
My God.
So do we want to read some Sister Solidarity stories, maybe?
Yeah. Well, I have a Sister Solidarity story. You have a coming out story. Is that cool if that's how we do it?
Sure. Whichever way you want.
So this person didn't say if they want to be anonymous or not, so I'm going to leave them anonymous. Hello. I wanted to share a Sister Solidarity story, so here we go. I was feeling super duper sick as a result of some really bad anxiety. The anxiety took a toll and I was so nauseous that I literally could not move a muscle without the risk of throwing up. As a person who never ever misses school, missing an entire week was the absolute worst. I hated not being able to see my friends every day as they are the highlight of it. Knowing this, my friend surprised me by coming over after school on Friday with tons of movies, books, flowers, snacks, and tea to spill in order to make me feel better. It was so great to see that I have such amazing friends who truly love me. Girl, I feel. This is literally me in high school, for real. Like, I had so many days where I was so overcome with my anxiety and depression that I could not get out of bed, that I just, everything hurt, and I felt sick all the time. I completely understand what she's feeling, and my friends were my lifeline, and that's why I will always be so eternally grateful for those people. And so the fact that this person has those people in their life, like, that brought a lot back for me and made me feel so good that people are becoming more and more understanding of, yeah, maybe this person isn't sick with the flu. They're understanding that you can be sick with your anxiety.
Yeah.
And have it be just as valid.
Or even if you're just sad. Like, I remember it wasn't in high school. It was after I moved here and my grandma passed away and I left work early. And it was just, it was at a time when I was living alone and it was just crying alone in my apartment.
Yeah.
And my girlfriends from work, all that day, like later that day, I got a delivery of flowers to my door.
Oh my gosh.
And because all of my girlfriends at work had, like, you know, pitched in and bought me a bouquet of flowers. And it was really, like, special to know that, like, you weren't alone. And, like, in that, it was just a tiny act to kind of, like, make you feel a little bit better.
Exactly.
You know?
And the fact that, like, they come over with, like, all this great stuff and they're like, so you missed a week of school. Here's the gossip.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's going on.
That's what now I cared about.
Yeah, because it helps you get your mind off of
it
things,
does.
Too. You're like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, totally.
So I necessarily wasn't like, oh, man, I'm missing school. I'd be like, fuck school, whatever.
I'm missing my friends. Yeah.
Yeah, I was missing my friends. And so I'll take this chance to say how eternally grateful I am for the people that have literally saved my life.
Yeah.
On multiple occasions. And
just knowing people care about you is so important.
And that they get you in those individual specific ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like they came over and gave her exactly what she needed at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. So amazing. So I really enjoyed that story. It kind of took me back like 10 years to
totally.
My high school self. And
thank
I loved
you
it.
So much for writing in.
Thank you.
All right. I got a coming out story.
I love it.
Hey, girls, I listen to your podcast every week, and it's my absolute fave.
Stop!
I have a cute little coming out story I thought I'd share. I've been friends with S since I was very young, and we both went to a pretty religious school where LGBT+ issues weren't often talked about, so naturally I was pretty worried about her reaction when I eventually came out to her. One day, I replied to her snap about having just seen Black Panther, such a great movie.
Yes.
And, of course, that was her saying that, not me. Although,
no, I know.
Although, also me.
Yeah, right? Didn't we have, like, 3 episodes in a row where we talked about
fucking Black? Yeah, we did.
If not more than that.
No regrets.
No regrets.
And, of course, we got to talking about Michael B. Jordan, because hot. Okay.
Thirst.
Such thirst.
But although, okay, so I have that thing with the holes. That freaks me out. Oh, you know. He's got the tattoos on his chest. That I couldn't.
The scarification. Not a fan of that. No, but he's still hot in that movie.
Ooh, damn.
So they're talking about Michael B. Jordan. I slid into the conversation about how even though I was a lesbian, I still appreciated how hot he was in that movie. And she replied with something like, cool, and went back to thirsting over him.
Yeah.
It was kind of a small thing, but it really meant a lot knowing she was cool with my identity. Thanks, Scout.
But, like, isn't that exactly how it should be?
It is.
We talked about Black Panther for so long. I also talked about Love, Simon for so long, where they have that scene where they're like, imagine if you had to come out to your parents that you were heterosexual.
Right.
Where it's like, that's how it should be. That it's not this big celebration or coming out. It should just be like, don't make assumptions about people's sexuality and just let them be who they're going to be. So if you say I'm a lesbian, it's like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what it sounds like your friend was. And as someone who went to Catholic school, that's pretty amazing. I mean, granted, I didn't go to a Catholic high school or anything when most people's sexualities were being discussed. But, growing up in the Catholic Church, that's pretty amazing for somebody to be so...
Yeah, which is why I understand why it's so difficult or scary to kind of, like, casually drop something like that in.
She must have been shaking when she sent that. Like, that is a bold
or in the
response
moments,
to a Snapchat.
In the moments between, like...
sending it
when you send it and you're, like, waiting and you see those, like, three little dots, like, waiting for, like, a response and you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very religious community, like, Bible Belt all the way very solidly. And that kind of thing, it would be really, really scary. And and the friend gave the best response you possibly could give.
Yeah.
Which is just, like... awesome.
That's almost better than being like, oh my God, thank you for trusting. I mean, which that is great too. I'm not downing.
However you respond is
great.
You know.
But like the fact that it was just so
casual.
Like, casual.
It didn't need to be.
But
I feel like that's what we're moving towards.
And
I
hope, Keegan. Yeah. I really hope
that. I hope that Generation Z and whatever follows, I hope it just gets easier and easier.
Yeah.
And I hope for us and the generations older than us, and I do include us in this because I think we still have tendencies because of the way that we were raised.
Right. It's your parents, too, who are raising you that affect how you think.
Yeah. I hope that our generation and the older generations can adapt to not putting those kinds of, like... because what we do with babies is so strange, where we're just like, oh, he's a little heartbreaker. All the girls, he's going to have to beat the girls off with a stick. He's an infant. You know what I mean? Like, have you seen that meme where it's like a little, she's a toddler, and she's doing what toddler babies do, which she was laying on her, and you can tell the dad thought this was really funny. There was a picture of this baby, like, laying on her back on the bed with her legs spread apart.
Yeah.
Just, like, you know, kicking her legs up.
It's like,
and he grabs her ankles and closes her ankles, and he's like, not today. Like, basically being, like, she, like, pushing her legs together, basically being, like...
that's so fucked
it's
up.
It's slutty for
as
your...
a child.
For your 8-month-old to have her legs spread. It's so weird to sexualize
children.
Well, especially
children. Because, like, babies are discovering their bodies and their body's ability. Like, you have to let them kind of move and do things, like...
But here's the thing, I doubt that this dad always... I mean, most adults know that, like, that their babies are stretching.
Right,
but
he's
the
trying
fact
to be
that
silly.
He thought it was funny is a problem.
Yeah.
Because it is this kind
it's
of subconscious sexualizing of children.
Right.
And I feel like we need to stop doing that so we can allow kids to grow into who they are.
Yes.
And then tell us what's going on with them. So... you know, like, we can't just... they would be less afraid to come out if we weren't just like, I can't wait for you to find the right guy. I can't wait for you to, you know... but thank you so much. She signed that as Scout.
Uh-huh.
So
which
I felt
was like, oh!
Yeah, I felt like it was okay to say that, kind of. So thank you so much, Scout,
That's
for writing in.
Name.
We so appreciate it.
I'm gonna name my baby
Scout.
Boy or girl, Scout. Yeah, we need more sister solidarity stories all the time. We need more coming out stories. If you just want to say, hey, if you want to ask us questions about ourselves or you want to share something or just, like, let us know. Like, this is something that I would really love, too, to just, like, let us know something good that's happened to you this week.
Yeah, I can always use more good news.
Right? Because a lot of times with, like, our What's in the News episodes, it can be very...
heavy.
Heavy, down. So I feel like just share the good shit that's happening in your lives.
Agree.
Because I personally really love it when people reach out to me and are talking about something great.
Yeah, totally. So you can do that via email at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist, on Twitter at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast, and you can also find us on Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you, Annie, for posting something on Facebook. My
oh,
God.
My God, yes. We so appreciate that. And
hey.
we will talk about that at another time.
Yes.
Annie, we saw it.
We saw it. We did not have time to read the entire thing. So... Put a pin in it.
Put a pin in that, yeah.
We'll remember it. I'm fucking exhausted.
Me too.
If you can't tell. And I've just had a whole glass of wine, so I'm like, bleh.
I'm very, very tired.
Yeah. All right. Well, we love you guys. And I guess with that, we just encourage you, you know?
To rage on.
Bye, guys.